is Roger Green, host of the Surfing the Mesh Tsunami podcast. This week, we are offering five conversations from episode five. I will look at the role NITs will play in 2024 with Naeem Alkhouri and Ian Rowe. Plus, from the vault, our first discussion of MASEF last summer. This conversation focuses more tightly on the specific challenges with the current approaches that use NITs to diagnose and stage advanced mesh fibrosis and explores several newer options and ways of thinking about the challenge. It starts with my comment and concern about the high level of false positives and negatives with FIB4, and I question how we can improve prediction. The group goes on to explore better ways to utilize tests, focusing mostly on automated lab detection algorithms, specifically with a shout out to John Dillon's work in the UK, and for the end of the discussion, newer methods and devices. Throughout this conversation, Ian Rowe expresses a somewhat more pessimistic outlook. Early in the conversation, he suggests that our current inability to stage patients may lead NHS and NICE to require biopsy before prescribing. Later, he suggests that the future tests may be adequate to task, but their relative scarcity and high prices make them unlikely to become a first-line option, at least in the UK. After availability of a MASH drug, making proper use of NITs in diagnosing, staging, and tracking patients remains a critical challenge for 2024. There's a great deal to reflect on, and we cover a lot of territory here. So just sit back, listen, learn, enjoy, and when you're done, join the dialogue in our LinkedIn discussion group.
So, question about that. And this goes back, I think, to what Naeem was saying. If FIB4 is only going to miss in one direction, then that's easier to make up for, right? But we've seen a couple of papers published recently that suggest that we're missing in both directions by big numbers, which adds to Naeem. In the States today, where people don't tend to have primary care and endo, certainly, don't have much access to scanning of any kind. If we're going to miss on both ends, then what do we do about that this week or this month, or really more to the point, this 6 months?
Louise Campbell.
Well, that's a difficult question, but we are better now than we were a couple of years ago. We need to progress, and we are progressing. And I don't think we can have a perfect early assessment yet. We just can't even get FIB4 in most places. But we're certainly better. We're moving in the right direction, because before FIB4 is in the algorithm, it was just left to personal choice as to whether you referred and you responded to an abnormal liver function test. And I think John Dillon and the team were suggesting that only 5% of those patients with abnormal liver function tests were actually acted upon. So that's what we're left with.
Jörn Schattenberg.
That's a good example too, Louise, because John Dillon's group has championed the automation of lab detection. I think it's going to come down to repeated testing using an AI algorithm or some software that's running in the back end of the EHR to flag patients. So we'll do retesting. Okay. I think Ian made the comment earlier about the 2 or 3 years intervals, which is probably not right for everybody. It's too strict or not strict enough. And you probably need a more individualized approach. And we can use technology and EHR data that's repeatedly assessed to inform us on that. And we'll miss patients to the upper and the lower end, but by retesting, we'll hopefully narrow that window a little bit and at least pick up the ones that are rapidly progressing and identify the right ones to be treated or retested.
So somebody want to give Ian a 30-second summary of everything he missed in the last 10 minutes so that he can rejoin?
Ian, I basically raised the issue that with NHS England, the Hepatitis C rollout program, we used lower cutoffs to include patients with advancing disease. And that program worked very, very well, so that we were able to identify more patients and treat more, and therefore bring down this transplantation need, the HCC, all of the issues that we saw, so that there could be this use of more lenient thresholds to increase the population at risk to reduce the outcome in the end, and that most places do not have access to AST in this country, and therefore even getting FIB4 routinely in the UK is a real problem. So we might need to solve that problem first.
Ian Rowe.
Yeah, so I heard a bit of what Naeem was saying about FibroScan of 11.5 and platelet count of 180, being confident that the patient had F3. And this all plays into the same issue about how confident we can be about stage of liver disease. And I don't want to draw any of the investigators' attention to how good they were at identifying disease that was met the inclusion criteria for the trials, because the screen failure rates were really quite high, suggesting that maybe we aren't that good at identifying those patients. And I think the real UK issue is around cost and cost effectiveness, and there's going to be considerable uncertainty around that when it comes to the payer decision should Madrigal pursue licensing in the UK, which as yet we've not seen any evidence of. So there's quite a lot of water to go under that bridge, and I think the big difference with hepatitis C medicines was that that was initially for patients who had cirrhosis, and you're right, the FibroScan liver stiffness threshold was set quite low, and that was because we understood that those patients were urgent need of treatment, and that treatment really was of benefit because the surrogate was established. In this context, I expect, unfortunately, we're going to see tighter restrictions rather than looser restrictions. And I have a significant fear that because of the way that the trials have been done and the payers' averseness to paying for drugs where there's considerable uncertainty, that this whole conversation about using non-invasive tests to select patients for treatments in the UK is likely to be moot, and that we will be stuck with liver biopsy in the beginning. I mean, I hope that that won't be the case, but it's what they do for cancer drugs, and I think that it's foreseeable that in trials that select using liver biopsy, that that's what we'll see, particularly where the condition that's being treated is MASH, and we honestly don't have a good biomarker for that. We have, you know, reasonable biomarkers for fibrosis, but not for the MASH. So I think it's a sort of long and perhaps slightly depressing outlook for what I think we're likely to see in the UK. And I suspect that that might be seen in other more cost-constrained settings too.
Interesting. Jörn, what are you likely to see in Germany, do you think?
The situation in Germany is a little different. If we get EMA approved approval, this will be carried over into the German system, in my understanding. And then there is an assessment of the drug over the standard of care as a comparator in the first year. And that first year, the full price is going to be negotiated. It might be that they said, well, the comparator is bariatric surgery or physical exercise or some other drug that is in a comparable situation. That's the big question. And that then leads in the end to the pricing based on the data they have submitted to that cost effectiveness analysis. It's a little bit more of a political and regulatory process here. But if it's an approved drug in the EU, there will be very little arguments for the company to not have it launched in Germany.
So as I'm listening to this conversation, one of the things I'm thinking about is that we read about technologies emerging. There were papers last year about NIS2. There's been some stuff about MASF recently. As Naeem pointed out, four different people were showing scans, candidly, with different price points and different economics around them at the Desert Liver Conference last weekend. And I think the people who are looking to compete with Echosens are looking at the financial models they use to do that and what they need to do to make it more attractive in primary care and endocrinology. So I expect we'll see that that will be a place where people will push to go to endocrinology, at least in the States. Louise, you're better positioned, I think, than any of us to talk about what's happening with scanning in the UK. But I guess my question is, A, is NIS2 a better enough test to matter? Is MASF a better enough test to matter? Do we see other things that are being reasonably well researched that we're confident will be better enough than what we have right now to matter? And then B, when you get outside the States, where I think eventually somebody will figure out how to make the economics of scanning work in primary care, possibly Echosens, possibly somebody else. What happens when you leave the U.S., where government controls the purchase of that kind of stuff a lot more regularly, a lot more assiduously? Start on question one. Are the tests coming that are good enough or better enough?
There are clearly tests that outperform, right? FIB4 standard ALTs. However, they are not available at a large enough scale, I would say, at this time to be used in clinical practice. And then the important thing is typically testing is not reimbursed. And the question is, who pays for the testing? Is this the patient? Is this the company that provides the drug? That can't be. And that's in the European system. But I'll hand it over to my colleagues.
Naeem, I don't know if you heard, but the question basically was, you know, you look at NIS2, you look at MASF, you look at some of the other things that are studied. Are there, given the limitations that we've got right now, are there going to be blood-based tests coming? Or in fact, will the new scanning devices you were talking about from last weekend coming in a way that will make this a lot easier to get done more efficiently or more cost-effectively and with better results? Can you envision that on the horizon right now? And if so, what do you think it looks like?
Naeem Alkhouri.
Yeah, definitely. With NIS4, you know, the plan is to move forward with the NIS2 Plus, which has, you know, similar accuracy. My understanding is it's not going to be available anytime soon. So we're talking about maybe in a couple of years from now. I might be wrong. I'm not speaking on behalf of LabCorp or anyone, but it's not commercially available. But I can envision a scenario where you do the FibroScan and let's say liver stiffness is 8.59. You're not too sure. You do a blood test like massive, you know, our liver, and then you get at-risk MASH, and you can argue that this patient has at-risk MASH. We have, you know, one imaging test, one blood test showing us the same thing, and you get them started on treatment. I think the biggest missing piece for these blood tests is the longitudinal follow-up and how they change in response to treatment. That data is being generated, but, you know, I cannot rely on them to say I'm going to select patients for treatment and then use the same test to assess response to treatment. So as I mentioned earlier, the response to treatment is going to be that trend in ALT, AST, and liver stiffness. And this is what we do for other liver diseases. So, you know, with PBC, we use alkaline phosphatase bilirubin and liver stiffness. For autoimmune hepatitis, we use ALT, AST, and liver stiffness. So this is how we do it in hepatology for the most part. And in challenging cases, we do more advanced testing.
The big issue around this is the we need Quentin there now to talk to you about pretest probability and the amount that that's changed by each of these tests. Because, yeah, a single test alone is not going to take you from what is always going to be a low pretest probability in patients who've got metabolic risk factors and a modestly elevated ALT. So it's going to have to be a series of tests, and whether, you know, and that's likely to be a blood-based test and an imaging test of some sort, and whether that is FIB4 plus FibroScan, whether it's NIS2 plus FibroScan or plus something different, you're going to need at least two biomarkers, I think, to have reasonable confidence that you have got a patient who's at risk who is going to benefit from treatment. Exactly how that is done is probably going to be different to the current algorithms that we're currently using to just look for the presence of sufficient fibrosis for patients to enter hepatology services in the UK, where the thresholds would be different for, you know, patients in the US and possibly different for patients in Germany. So I don't think we know what the optimal combination of tests is. And maybe the NAIL NIT screening programs will give us some of that information, but it won't give us all of it, I don't think. And one of the big things that is, I hope, going to result from a licensed therapy is some large-scale investigator-initiated programs to try and answer some of these questions about who the treatment population really is, what the effect of drug is in practice, and what ultimately what the beneficial effects of treatment are.
I was just going to pick up on the point of the different opportunities and the options that we have in scanning, and I think they will develop out. I don't think there's any doubt of that. One of the problems we've had in the past is shear wave figures most people don't understand. If you speak to most physicians, they understand kilopascals by FibroScan. Hepatoscope and Escopics is a surrogate of FibroScan and use the same levels. So I think we can say that that's an interchangeable level of stiffness. Most of the machines that I managed to catch sight of at the conference were still quite large machines. They're not point of care. Going out to primary care, I am more than happy to discuss models with people about how to make this highly cost effective, but it's unlikely to be the producers of the devices that do that. And I think we sit in the luxury field of all coming from a hepatology background where we have highly skilled practitioners who can operate these devices. If you look at the evidence coming out of the Locate NAFL study in Australia, physicians got 66% of those patients, nurses got 99%. The more we increase the ability to scan, the more likely we are to weaken the skill set of the people scanning. And remember, when I scan, I don't just scan MASH and muzzled. I scan autoimmune, which has a totally different level of cutoff. I'm scanning different patients with different diseases for different reasons, not just lifestyle and early detection. So I think you do need a level of knowledge behind. And what we don't want to do is make these tests not worth the levels, or people lack trust as we have lots of devices. So I think we need to have safety for patients and quality. And I think FibroScan is regulated in the UK. It's a diagnostic ultrasound, and therefore it comes with certain levels of safety for that. So I think I'm all for welcoming in everything that gets out to a patient. We just need to be careful how that's done by any of the devices. But I like what I've seen, and I've just got my hands on the brand new technology from Echosense today, and it's the only one in the UK. Okay, so it's very exciting.
And now, back to Roger.
We hope you've enjoyed this recording. If you have any questions or comments about the content of this conversation or the entire episode, please put them in the review section of the page from which you downloaded this conversation, or send an email to questions@surfingmash.com. We're still working on next week's episode, possibly a payer episode, possibly something else. Watch, listen to this space for details. Until then, stay safe, surf on. We'll see you on the podcast. Bye-bye now.